This week on the show, the Celtics season is over. We're joined by Yahoo Sports' Jordan Schultz on what the Celtics can do next to get back to the doorstep of the NBA Finals, plus a dramatic move by the Red Sox during the week. We got reactions to all that and more. Calling It starts right now. It is Memorial Day Monday, but that's not going to stop us calling a podcast. Alex Barth and Alex Lebowitz, you actually didn't have to get up at 4 in the morning this time.
I had today off. Oh, it was beautiful. I got to sleep in. It was nice. And when you have the long weekends, the next week goes by even quicker. So 4-day week, it's going
to
be fun.
So I'm expecting you to really, this should be like your most high energy show since you started your job at Lowell.
Oh, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go.
And it is a special show for you, too, but we'll get into that a little later in the program. Somebody who wasn't high energy, and that was the Boston Celtics last night. So for our final Celtics breakdown of the season, we welcome Jordan Schultz, Yahoo Sports NBA Insider. He also co-hosts The Pull-Up with CJ McCollum. Jordan, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So let's start here, because that was an odd game last night. I don't think people really expected the defensive battle that it was. Did the Cavs win that game in your mind, or did the Celtics lose it?
I thought the Cavs won it because they, when you're on the road against a team that is undefeated in the playoffs and has played at the level the Celtics have, especially defensively, to go out and not have a great offensive performance. And, you know, I mean, they made two, in the first half, Cleveland had two threes. They had one assist, with Boston had seven. And the turnovers were really bad. So I just think the Celtics or the Cavs did a hell of a job at staying in, at staying focused. As Ty Lue has said, and I've been critical of him, but finding a way to just stay connected in games. And that was the difference for me. But, yeah, I mean, seven turnovers at the half. It looked like in the first half that Boston was able to control tempo, and instead of being up four, they should have been up 10. But Cleveland stuck with it, and you know, that's the kind of game where you really miss a guy like Kyrie or Hayward or both, just because they weren't able to control the tempo in the second half the way they wanted.
We've heard the argument time and time again. Is it, do you stick with Marcus Smart, or do you choose Terry Rozier? Last night, Rozier did not have a good game at all. Did that kind of cement the argument? Is Smart the guy moving forward?
Well, I don't know. For one, the whole argument, the narrative that the Celtics would be better off just trading Kyrie, I think you saw last night, and in the series, that's crazy. I mean, you're talking about, to me, one of the best 10 to 12 players in the league who's 25. I really like Marcus Smart, and I really like Terry Rozier, who's 24. The Smart has a lot of guys around the league, a lot of teams that like him. It's a matter of money, and what is he going to command on the open market? He shot just 32% in the conference finals. So you see offensively, he's a very streaky shooter. He gives them a lot of different intangibles, as we know. Rozier, what really surprised me is that in this series, he was unable to generate his own offense. And what you saw in the first two rounds was a guy that was confident and playing loose, and he just got totally clamped up by a team that really struggles defensively. A lot of that's on George Hill. If I had to pick between those two guys, I would still go Rozier, because I think his upside is through the roof at 24, despite the fact that he was so bad in last night's game.
So, okay, Marcus Smart last night, he said, you know, the figure's 12 to 14 million that he's worth. He said he's worth more than that, though, personally. Do you agree with that? And do you agree with that? Do you think he's worth more than that 12 to 14 million dollar range?
No. Especially right now, given that this is going to be a dry market this summer. Next summer, the summer of 2019, will be somewhere in the middle between 2017 and 2018. It won't be as good as it was last summer, but it won't be as bad as it will this summer. I want to say Boston can offer him a qualifying offer of $6.1 million, and then he could become an unrestricted free agent next summer. For me, Marcus Smart is probably, I don't know if he's just saying that publicly, but if that's really how he feels, then his value of himself is higher than I think what teams think of him. Like I said, he has teams around the league that like him. I've had multiple personnel people tell me, you know, we really like Marcus Smart at the right price. We'd love to have him, but 12 to 14 million is a lot for a guy that's literally one of the worst shooting guards percentage-wise in the NBA. And I know he has a lot of intangibles, but for an NBA guard not to shoot threes, you know, in a decent clip, it's very hard, even though he does so many other things. So I don't think he's worth more than that, no.
A guy who did really prove his worth last night was Jason Tatum. He was probably the Celtics' best player in the series. What did Tatum do last night for his standing in the NBA? Where does he now kind of sit, a guy who's just been in the league for a year and finished up the season by posterizing LeBron?
How excited are you guys? Just put it that way.
Oh, it's amazing. Right? It's like watching Paul Pierce all over again. At least I feel that way.
Yeah, and that was the comparison that, you know, I had been told that people wanted to make as well, just in general. Can Jason Tatum be Paul Pierce? And I think he's better. I think he's going to be better. I think his length, and Pierce even said it, the shot-making ability. He's only 20 years old, but he plays with such maturity and pace. And I tweeted last night, I think he joined Kareem as the only rookies ever in the NBA history to have 10 20-point games in the playoffs. And so I think he cemented himself again as one of the best young players in the league, not just best young rookies. And you compare that with Jaylen Brown, who's 21, and Rozier, 24. I mean, their young core with Hayward and Kyrie, and then Al Horford. I mean, they're a really, really good young team with a lot more basketball to play. If I'm a Celtics fan, I'm disappointed that they lost, especially at home, but at the same time, I mean, you're talking about a team that is just beginning to scratch the surface, just like Philadelphia, of what it can become.
And that kind of seems to be the mood around here this morning, but you just listed off some of the young players, and one guy you didn't list is Jaylen Brown. With Tatum doing what he did this season and Gordon Hayward coming back from injury, where does that leave Jaylen Brown standing with the Celtics? Because he seems to be in this conversation kind of the odd man out of the starting five next year.
I don't think he is. When it comes down to it, you know, Jaylen Brown has he has the nastiness and the athleticism and the toughness that you really want, especially now with the fact that he can play small ball four, the fact that he can play the three. He's 21. I mean, I love Jaylen Brown. I think the growth he made this year was astronomical. I mean, it was really impressive because people were not happy last year with him, and rightfully so. But this year he was sensational, and you saw his ability to affect to affect the game on both sides of the ball. Is he the odd man out? I don't know. I think that, to me, there's more duplicity between Hayward and Tatum as playmakers than Brown, who's more of a get downhill, you know, kind of a bulldog type of player. But ultimately, this is a good problem to have for Danny Ainge. But to have three really good, young, versatile wings is really rare, because that's the position now that's a commodity in the league. And if you have one really good one, you're happy. They have three. So it's a good problem to have.
So you talked about, they have a surplus of talent, essentially. Last offseason, we saw Danny Ainge trade someone who many thought, yeah, maybe he'll get a max contract in Isaiah Thomas. Do you see Danny Ainge making any other big moves this offseason to kind of bring some big name in and get rid of a couple of the middle-of-the-pack guys they have right now?
You know, I don't know. I think part of that, a lot of that hinges on Smart, but to me, the answer is no, because, like, they don't have to, you know, like, just making a move to make a move is something that some GMs get coaxed into, and it's a mistake. But they have, because of who they have already, and then the fact that they have Irving and Hayward coming back, I would imagine that this should be a relatively quiet offseason. And we can talk about Rozier, who will be restricted in 2019, or Smart, but ultimately, the Celtics, if they're healthy, you'd have to think that they'll be the favorites next year to come out of the East and maybe win the West, or maybe win a championship. And you just have to look at the odds makers. I mean, they know how good Boston is. So I would expect a more of a quiet offseason. My only thing with Boston is, you know, we go back to the health. To just assume guys are going to be healthy can be a little dangerous, but there's no reason to think that Hayward and Irving won't be good to go next year. And with that in mind, they should be a great team.
And again, we're talking to Jordan Schultz from Yahoo Sports. Jordan, before we let you go, it's been year after year, it seems like for the last decade, these epic battles between LeBron James and the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. But sounds like LeBron might be packing up, shipping out of Cleveland. Was last night the last chance the Celtics will get at LeBron, at least in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Alex, I think so. And you know what's crazy is
whether or not Cleveland wins a championship almost seems like immaterial. Like, that's how much I think he's gone. And, you know, we can read in between the tea leaves, but when it comes down to it, I really don't think he's coming back to Cleveland. I've said for a while, I think he'll be a Laker. The Lakers are intriguing for him because he can do so many things other than basketball there. He can continue to build his career, his brand. They can go out and get a guy like Paul George, and they can build around, you know, Kuzma and Ingram. If I'm LeBron, though, why would I want to go back to Cleveland? I know that there's a loyalty factor, but, this is a really flawed team. As you guys saw for seven games, this team, when it comes down to it, is an average, below-average basketball team that is completely buoyed by the greatest player in the world. But when it comes down to it, they don't have a lot for him there, and they don't have the financial flexibility or cap. I was talking to a GM recently about it. They don't have the ability to really go out and get a lot better. The only possible thing they can do is to kind of pull a rabbit out of their hat and maybe make a crazy trade and go out and get a guy like, Kawhi Leonard. I can't imagine that happening because they just don't have the assets. They don't have the picks, the young players. So for me, he's definitely gone, and that should be music to the eyes of, to the ears of Celtics fans.
Well, I think the one thing that's giving people pause about, you know, celebrating the leave of LeBron is, do you think there's any chance he goes to Philly and just jacks that rivalry up?
It's possible. It doesn't make as much basketball sense as maybe the Lakers, just because, like, as good as the Sixers are, you know, Philadelphia, I don't think J.J. Redick will be back. Ben Simmons is a guy that is still at the point in his career, the infancy stages, where he needs the ball in his hands. The Lakers are if you look at that roster, obviously it's very green, but you have guys like Ingram and Kuzma that can really shoot it and score, go out and get another free agent, and all of a sudden that could be a juggernaut, regardless of what happens with Lonzo. But for me, Philadelphia is a player in this. Houston's a player, but I would deem the Lakers the favorite and the Cavs with little to no chance of getting him back, even if they win a championship.
You can follow Jordan Schultz on Twitter at Schultz Report. Check him out with CJ McCollum on the pull-up. Check him out at Yahoo Sports. Jordan, thanks so much for taking the time today.
No problem, guys. Talk to you soon. Take care.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
All right, well, there you have it. It's over. Celtics season comes to an end at the hands of Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 7 in Boston, 87-79. So I took a break from Twitter this weekend, and I'm glad I did because I wanted to remind people before the game yesterday that I went on the Asmund and Budick show down in New York a couple weeks ago, and I told them, I guaranteed, I said, I don't think the series gets to seven games, but if it does, I will guarantee you the Celtics win a Game 7 in Boston. So, my bad. Whoops. But I am surprised they didn't win. I am not surprised they didn't win the series. I had the Cavs winning the series. But when it got to Game 7 in Boston, they should have won that. They choked. They choked.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I don't think they choked at all. A lot of people are labeling it choke. I'm going to stick with the point I made before the postseason even started. No matter what happens this playoffs, it doesn't matter the results. All that matters is that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown get the reps in the playoffs that you'd want them to get. And they got more than I thought they ever would. They pushed to a Game 7. Really, they had a 2-0 lead and then a 3-2 lead and then lost in 7. I get the optics of that. But it comes down to Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown not playing well, not the entire team. Horford showed up, Tatum showed up, and defensively they didn't do all that bad. They held the Cavs to 87 points. It was really just Terry Rozier who crapped the bed and showed you how important players like Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward will be to the team. I don't think it's a choke. I think it's a young team that got outplayed by one of the greatest to ever play.
But, okay, so a couple things to touch on there. I said going into the game yesterday, the Celtics needed to score 90 points to win. Because even if LeBron gets 50, I said there's no way they get 40 from the rest of the roster.
Yeah.
They scored 79 points at home in Game 7. They shot 34% from the field, 17% from deep, 73% from the line. That's a choke. Look, I believe this whole season, they're playing with house money. We know that. The whole season was spectacular. This team's going to go down in Boston lore right next to the 67 Red Sox. as the teams we love the most despite not winning a championship. Okay? The whole thing was excellent. And I didn't expect them to win this year, but when you get up 2-0 and you're playing the way you've played at home in the playoffs and then drop that, that's a choke. And you mentioned Terry Rozier having a bad game, and he was awful. 2 for 14, 0 of 10 from deep, didn't get to the line. Bye, Terry. Bye. But Al Horford was good, but he only had, I think it was one shot in the second half. Jason Tatum had that dunk over LeBron and then didn't shoot for 6 minutes. I put that on Brad. What was Brad doing?
Okay, so
can we say Brad choked a little bit? Can we say Brad, maybe the moment was too big for him? It's a good learning experience, but that doesn't mean that we can't say it wasn't a choke.
I thought he probably should have gone to Horford and Tatum more often than he did. Instead, you know, you have Smart who keeps chucking up threes, which every time he chucks them up, you're like, oh, that's not going in. I'm looking at the box score right now, as are you. Going down, Horford, 7 for 12 from the field, Tatum, 9 for 17.
But 7 of 12, your max player, your supposedly best player, should take more shots in a game 7 than 12. And whether it's Horford needing to be more assertive or Brad having a better game plan, and I think it's a little bit of both, that's a mistake that this team had. That's why they are where they are. They were not the most talented team, I think, in any series in the playoffs, maybe against Philly. But they didn't make mistakes. They didn't make that kind of mistake. They didn't shy away from the big
moment. They made mistakes in that in round one.
The Bucks. Giannis was the best player on the floor. They did not have the best player on the floor in two of the three series. They may have against Philly. I'm not that high on Ben Simmons. I'm really not that high on Joel Embiid.
Better than Ben Simmons, in my opinion.
So in three series, okay. They didn't have the best player on the floor. And that's really all it comes down to in the NBA, is who was the best player on the floor.
Exactly.
And the reason they were able to win is they didn't make mistakes and they didn't shy away from the moment. They shied away from the moment last night.
I don't think it's shying away from the moment. I think it's one player specifically, Terry Rozier, who crapped the bet. 0 for 10 from beyond the arc. That's awful. 4 points... 4 assists, 4 rebounds. He played horrendously. He played the worst game of the entire playoffs by any Celtic was Terry Rozier, game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. You cannot put that in the rest of the roster.
At Calling It Podcast on Twitter, at Real Alex Barth, at Alex _ Levwich. Those are the Twitter accounts. AlexBarth2012@gmail.com. If you missed any of it, you can find my bio on clnsmedia.com. The reason I give you that information, if you are still somebody who was in the camp that Terry Rozier should be a part of this team, and if you think they should trade Kyrie Irving, if you still believe that today, I want you to contact me and tell me why. Like, please. Please.
Meet me in the back parking lot.
Flood my inbox with that. I have no desire for Terry Rozier to be here next year. I don't. And I still think, look, he crapped his trade. He crapped all over his trade value last night. And maybe that was some sneaky way of his to decide he wanted to stay in Boston. But there's no reason you need Terry Rozier on this team next year with Kyrie Irving coming back, Marcus Smart, and Shane Larkin. You don't need him. He's a fine third point guard. I'll keep Marcus Smart because of what he does defensively. He was fine defensively yesterday. He didn't shoot great, but that's Marcus Smart.
+2, and he was 1 for 10 from the field.
And you need Marcus Smart. If you're ever going to beat Golden State or Houston, you need Marcus Smart's defense. Look, Marcus Smart was not good last night, but what he gives you normally in big games is fine. It wasn't just last night for Terry Rozier. He had been bad this whole series. Did he have one good game against Cleveland? One? Again, shied away from the moment.
Yeah, I think he kind of solidified the argument, Marcus Smart or Terry Rozier, that whole debate. And we talked about it with Jordan Schultz in the previous segment. Yeah, and he said keep Rozier. I don't agree with that at all. You got a guy who can score.
Look, I mean, if you want to keep him,
you can keep him. I'm talking about over Marcus Smart. No way.
Not over Marcus Smart. Not over Kyrie Irving. That's more what I meant. Look, if you want to keep Terry Rozier, I mean, he's a good bench player, and you have him under contract for another year. But I'm not giving him a max deal, and I'm not trading Kyrie Irving so he gets more minutes. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing either of those things.
Yeah, and Rozier won't get a max deal. I don't think. I think people went crazy because he had a few good games where he went off offensively. He is a gifted scorer. He's very good, and he's got an attitude, which you love. And the whole Eric Bledsoe lore, that really added to his hype. It was too much, though. It was exactly that. It was hype.
Right.
It's Marcus Smart. He's the guy moving forward. He is the spark off the bench. And again, it's plus-minus, +2, led the Celtics, even though he went for 1 for 10.
What was Rozier's?
Rozier was Minus six, which so, wasn't the worst. Tatum was the worst, but
right.
he played the most minutes.
I will say this. Tatum was minus 17, as good of a game as he had.
But played the most minutes, all but six. But which is still bad. I mean, they only lost by eight, so you could argue when he was off the floor, maybe he's a defensive liability.
No, he is a defensive liability, and that's what they need to work on. They need more defense off the bench. They just had all these scores. Oh, it's tough to tell. And, I mean, this is, I guess, a good point in the conversation and transition to this summer. It is tough to tell exactly what this team is because they didn't have their two best players. They didn't have one of their best players the whole season. But I do think this is kind of a double-edged sword because you hear people talk about, oh, they're going to add Kyrie and Hayward next year and they're going to be great. We never saw Gordon Hayward in Boston. We really did. I mean, you can take out the first 5 minutes of the season, which what does that tell you? Gordon Hayward could slide in and just be another guy in the system. He may not elevate this team. Or if he does, whose minutes is he taking? I'm not sure Kyrie coming back is huge because we saw what he brings. And again, I think that, you know, you're essentially upgrading Terry Rozier with Kyrie Irving, and that's going to help. I'm not saying Gordon Hayward isn't an upgrade over Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown or Marcus Morris. I'm not saying that. But we never saw him in this system. All indications are he'll fit. But I'm not sure he is the addition everybody thinks he is. Does he need to be for them to win a title? No. But they still need to figure out something where when you add him, he's going to be taking somebody's minutes that are moved to bench minutes. But if he's taking Jason Tatum's minutes, I mean, you're looking at a lot of lack of defense, especially in the reserve unit, coming off the bench. That could be a problem.
Those aren't going to be the minutes that he's taking. I'm worried about maybe a guy like Semi Ojeleye developing with a guy like Gordon Hayward being on the roster.
You're worried about Semi Ojeleye developing?
If you think that Jason Tatum's minutes are going to suffer because of Gordon Hayward, I don't know what to tell you. That's not going to happen. It's going to be guys like Semi Ojeleye who are going to play
less. You're worried about his development. I thought you said you're worried about him getting... You were worried about him developing into a good player and it being even more.
No, I'm worried about just him getting minutes so that he can fit in. But Marcus Morris.
I'm not so worried about Ojeleye developing or not. It doesn't matter to me.
Well, maybe not because they don't need him. But they have a surplus of talent. The guys who are not gonna lose out because of Gordon Hayward, it's not going to be Tatum or Brown. I think Tatum, Brown, and Gordon Hayward will all be in the starting lineup together with Horford at the five and Kyrie at the one.
So wait, Kyrie, Tatum. Horford.
No, yeah, Kyrie, Tatum, Rundgren. Hayward, Brown, Horford. And they'd go small.
So who's left off there?
It would be Rozier.
Oh, that's just
Smart.
A really small lineup.
It's a small lineup. You have three small forwards essentially starting and then a power forward at your center.
Yeah.
Which you can do in today's NBA. You don't need.
But you have to remember who they're going to play. I don't love that against Philly.
All right, then start. How about you can bring Brown off the bench and start Baines.
I mean, that's fine. And then you have Smart and Rozier, but they only played, for all the talk of LeBron being gassed, the Celtics only played seven guys last night. Six of them played 30 minutes or more. Aaron Baines started, but only played 19 minutes, didn't take a shot. That doesn't seem sustainable to me. We talked about LeBron being
tired. Well, they're
not going
to do that in the regular season. That's the playoffs. When you get down to the playoffs.
But here's the beauty of it. The Celtics are good enough now that we don't have to care about the regular season. That's the beauty of the NBA. Do you have any doubt that the Celtics are going to be out of a top four seed next year in the East?
They'll be top two in all likelihood. Probably
right.
The one seed. I mean,
two,
they're going
to maybe
dominate.
Three. Maybe three if they really decide to take it easy.
Yeah.
I don't care about the regular season. Brad will figure that out.
But doesn't this postseason kind of prove that they need home court?
No, because they have the experience now. I think it helps, but it does. They had home court. They didn't win. Does it prove it? They had home court. It wasn't enough.
But they lost. They only won one game on the road. If the roles were reversed and the Cavs were the higher seed, you could argue they would have been done in five or six. Who knows? Because they probably would have put them away earlier. They take the 2-0 lead. It's not LeBron James in a 2-0 deficit. It's a young Celtics team in a 2-0 deficit. But enough with the hypothetical.
Well, no, because I actually have a great comment.
Okay,
that.
Go.
Do you remember the shot Kyrie Irving hit for Cleveland in the finals? Where was that shot?
It's Golden State.
Yeah, I'm not worried about them on the road.
That's
when he's
a
back.
Different team.
I'm
that's
not
true.
About
you got
it.
You, okay.
I think was more of a youth thing than anything else.
And I agree. But back to the crux of this argument, which is Gordon Hayward really all that valuable to the Celtics? And he is. And it's you saw it yesterday. Jason Tatum on LeBron James looked like a chihuahua on a pit bull. He was aggressive. He tried his best. And he did force a couple bad shots. Like, to his credit, he held his own for the most part, but he was clearly outmatched. Gordon Hayward's a way better two-way player at this point in his career, and he adds something defensively which Brad Stevens can use and which he would thrive with. Gordon Hayward, we'll be looking back on this, he will be a huge addition to the Celtics. And I'm not talking about being the best team in the Eastern Conference with the roster, what we imagine it'll be. Best team in the NBA, and I'm talking challenging the Golden State Warriors.
You think he's going to be that much of a difference maker?
I think having Kyrie Irving, having Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum a year older, and Jaylen Brown a year older, this Celtics team will be lethal next year. We've seen a progression every single year that Brad Stevens has taken over. This year, they made it to Game 7 with the Cavaliers. Next year, they will be in the finals. Maybe they don't win it, but it's going to be a competitive series against whoever comes out of the West. I can guarantee that.
I mean, you just can't be allowing Jeff Green and his new heart just go 19-8. It can't be. You can't be doing that. And again, I think that reflects on the coaching, but now we're kind of caught in a circle. real quick, before we wrap it up, do they make a big move this offseason? I know we just asked Jordan. He said no, but do you think they do?
I don't know. It's so unpredictable, Danny Ainge. I could see them moving Rozier. That's if they keep Smart, though. It all hinges on if they give Smart that qualifying offer and keep him for next season. I think if they do keep him, yeah, we'll see a move. I don't know if it's going to be big or not, but we'll see something that is of a is noteworthy for sure.
I think Danny Ainge is pissed again. I think they're, one, going to go over the luxury tax. And two, I think they make a big trade, and not with the player. You got to remember, they have the Sacramento pick next year, which will probably be pretty high. They got a Memphis pick in a couple years that's unprotected, and they got a Clippers pick that's eventually unprotected as well. They do still have three very valuable. They're not like the Brooklyn picks, but there's still three pretty valuable picks
Kings
left.
The pick could be top 10 next season, right, top 5,
right.
Top 3. Even.
So I think they move those picks. And maybe Rozier with them. I think they bring in another big, not necessarily a superstar, but I think they bring in another big name. Maybe especially like a defensive name. Not Kawhi Leonard. But I think they're going to give us a lot to talk about.
Do you
this
have
summer.
A name?
I don't. But look, I didn't have Kyrie Irving for you this time last year.
That's
so,
true.
So they're going to give us a lot to talk about this summer, though. But for right now, there's only one team left to talk about. That's the Boston Red Sox. We'll talk about them on the other side.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com. You can
sound the alarm, you can call out your thoughts, you can fence it. So we mentioned at the top of the show, we're celebrating a big anniversary on the show today. It's actually a year to the day, because I guess we didn't do a show. I think it was a Wednesday show last year.
We did on a Wednesday, yes.
Probably because of the Memorial Day holiday. That's before we were these real warriors that come in every Monday no matter what, unless it snows a little bit and I don't want to get out of bed. But 1 year ago today, Mr. Alex Lebowitz joined the show. And I hope you feel like it's been worth your time.
It absolutely has. I've had a blast. We've interviewed a lot of awesome people. Get to talk sports, and this is my outlet. The show I do in Lowell, we do talk Celtics, and we do talk sports when it's big. We'll spend, you know, hours at a time on it if necessary, but it's mostly political, and it's mostly, you know, the serious political stuff. I like to goof around, talk sports every once in a while. So this show has been awesome. It's been a lot of fun, and I think that it's really coming to its own for sure.
It's been a pleasure to have you. Here's to another good year and then some of the Calling It podcast.
And thank you for bringing me along. You didn't have to do that. You sent me a text, and I didn't think you'd even consider that, but I was surprised. I was like, oh, wow, that means a lot. So it was a lot of fun. It was something that I didn't even have to hesitate to decide to do. And it's been worth my time then. So
I mean, who would have known when we were doing shows together back my sophomore year, freshman year, Ithaca, that what we were planning for? No, it was an easy choice, and I'm glad you're enjoying it.
And I do remember the first show I did with you. We were talking about Alex Smith and like Peyton Manning and something, and I made the mistake of calling Peyton Manning a game manager, which he ended up being later in his career. Yes. But he wasn't at that point. And you jumped out my throat. He is a playmaker. He is not a game manager. I don't know if you remember that, but I was like, Jesus, God, I gotta hide now.
I do vaguely remember that. No, it's I look, you know me. I wasn't gonna let you have it easy. There's no rookie mistakes on this show.
Definitely not. And that was my first year of actually doing radio, but it was a lesson.
That was like 2 weeks after you graduated, right?
2 weeks after
you graduated college, right? Was your first show
here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, did I say that to you at Ithaca?
No, you said that to me at Ithaca.
I'm talking. That makes more sense.
Freshman
that
year.
That makes more sense. Okay.
This is 2 weeks after I started college.
I was just some sophomore. I shouldn't have jumped on you like that. Wow.
It taught me a valuable lesson. Don't just say stuff to say it.
So. Well, it's been fun. And I do consider this the 1 year anniversary of the show. I did do some solo shows before, but it definitely wasn't the same. So, also, of course, you got to thank all the listeners for sticking with us through 1 year. We love you guys. And spread the word, you know, share the show. And we really appreciate you guys hanging out with us a little bit every week, whether it be – I know some people listen Monday nights. Some people listen Tuesday mornings. I know there's one person who listens every Wednesday night, which, I mean, most of what we say is dated by then, but so be it.
Yeah, not necessarily. Listen to it.
Friday nights, you know, enjoy it.
Go back and listen to old shows that don't make sense anymore.
Speaking of dated, we didn't get to touch on this last week. I do that sometimes. We miss a couple takes here and there. But speaking of stuff that's dated, this happened last – not dated, but we didn't get a chance to talk about it when it happened. It was Friday, I believe. Yeah, it was Friday.
Yep.
The Red Sox, out of nowhere – I'm getting ready for my weekend off, right? I had to post something up for CLNS real quick. I'm like, all right, I'm going to get in the shower. I'm going to start enjoying my weekend off. I made the wrong decision of looking at my phone real quick, and I see Alex Spear. The Red Sox designated Hanley Ramirez for assignment. What? What? I am still surprised. I look, 3 days later, 4 days later, I understand why they did it in general. I don't understand why then, and I don't understand how they did it. I consider it overall a negative move.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on this. Part of me like commends a guy like Alex Cora because I think this ultimately came down to his word.
You believe Dave Dombrowski on that?
I think Alex Cora did have a big say in this.
I hope he didn't because you want to lose the locker room quickly. That's how you do it.
But it's a matter of if you think that Hanley Ramirez is really a good locker room guy. I don't think he really is. I think he's a goofball.
He was that locker room.
No, he wasn't.
You really don't believe that?
Who do you think's more respected in that locker room, David Price or Hanley Ramirez?
I think Price, but I think Ramirez was up there, and if you take Ramirez out, then there's a black hole that David Price is just going to be able to grab. You just made David Price more powerful in that locker room.
No, I don't think so. Maybe, but I think that Hanley Ramirez does not – the perception of him in that locker room is not what you're claiming it to be. I think he's a goofball. I think he's someone who, you know, when he decides to play, he can play really well, but he's inconsistent, has all the talent in the world, but he lacks the focus. I think other professional athletes can sense that. I don't think anyone's crying over Hanley Ramirez being gone. I think there was a platoon there, and they wanted to give him less time. They decided I don't think he would take to this all too well.
But just ask him. Ask him first. Don't just cut him. That looks horrible.
You can't ask him because then you're like, listen, we don't want to play you as much. Are you going to like that? Obviously, he's going to say no. He's never been I don't think he's a great locker room guy. I think he's unfocused at times.
I think you can do that. I think you can go to him and say, hey, look, you're hitting, you know, 0 for May. We're only going to hit you against righties. We're going to give Blake some more time. We're going to give Mitch some more time. And if he says, no, you can't do that, then you cut him. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that's a lot better than just cutting him out of nowhere. And I don't think it was Cora's decision. I think Dave Dombrowski in that post-game press conference was cowardly. Okay? Yeah. That was – he was running scared to hide behind his manager. He said two things that I 100% do not believe, that it was Cora's idea and it had nothing to do with the vesting option.
Well, yeah, that second part's definitely a lie.
Right. And now they could get sued by the MLBPA. And that's maybe why he said it had nothing to do with the vesting option. But here's what I want to ask. Because you said you believe that it was Cora's decision.
I think at the very least he had a big say in it.
Who do you think initiated the idea? Who do you think went to who and said, what if we DFA Hanley?
I don't know if it's like that. I think sometimes GMs or president of baseball operations and the manager have conversations. They say, listen, this is what we want to do moving forward. And I think what they wanted to do is give Swihart specifically more at-bats to bolster his trade value.
Right, but who brought it up? When they're going through, okay, who are we taking off the roster to give Swihart more time to bring Dustin Pedroia up? Who do you think said Hanley Ramirez's name first?
I don't know. I think it could have been Dombrowski. I think he's the veteran guy. So maybe he's the one who sparked the decision. But I think he had support of Cora, and at the end of the day, what's the difference?
No, I think he had his support, but here's what I'm worried about. You have either one, the general manager, the president of baseball operations, the president of baseball operations throwing the manager under the bus, in front of the media, which, I mean, look, we've lived that the last 2 years. Sucks. The other is that's really what happened. And the president of baseball operations is letting the manager make personnel decisions. In which case, why is Dombrowski here? He just got bitched around by a first-year manager. Does that give you any confidence in Dave Dombrowski if his first-year manager is making the personnel decisions?
Well, no, because it's not that. You're oversimplifying it. Cora isn't making any decisions. It has to go through Dombrowski. Dombrowski's not going to greenlight anything unless he believes it's the right move to make.
He said that he took Cora's word for it, that it was Cora's idea and Cora's exit. That Cora went to him and said, do this, and he said, okay. That is what he made it.
That means
like.
He was open to it from the start, and this goes back to the vesting option. And what it ultimately comes down to is, if Hanley got less at bats, would he be a distraction? Would he be a distraction? I don't think you need to ask him whether or not he'd be a distraction to have that answer. We know what type of guy he is. He gets complacent. You want to stick a guy who's already has problems being complacent on the field. You want to take that guy and you know. Cut his at-bats in half, essentially. I don't think it's going to work out. You might as well rip the Band-Aid off, and that's exactly what they did, and they haven't lost a step.
Here's the one thing I'm worried about. I think we had a poll up on the show's Twitter account on Friday, at Calling the Podcast. You can check it out. Do you think Hanley Ramirez will play in the major leagues again this season? It was 100% answered yes.
Absolutely, yeah.
And people are saying different teams and whatever. And you mentioned this when we started talking about Hanley, right? When he's focused, he's unstoppable, right? Like he was against the Yankees pretty much his whole career in Boston. You know who has the worst OBP among designated hitters in the American League?
Worst team?
Like what team has the worst OBP among their designated hitters?
The New York Yankees?
No. Well, I mean, close. The Houston Astros. But I'll say either one. The Yankees could use him too. What happens when he gets signs with Houston or the Yankees and he comes back here in October pissed off and just wrecks the Red Sox in a playoff series? They didn't need to cut him to stop him from getting that option. And now they've unleashed him on whoever, and you know it's going to come back and bite them. Because that's what happens to the Red Sox. Just like Jeff Green dropping 19 points against the Celtics in Game 7, you know Hanley's going to come back to Fenway in the playoffs and knock the Red Sox out.
Hey, that could happen. That could definitely happen. And if I were the Yankees and the Astros, oh, yeah, I'm looking into that big time.
I'm surprised the Astros haven't signed him yet, to be honest.
Well, that's what they do. They sign these players who are, you know, essentially given to them. Like Verlander last year, trade for him.
He has a 1.08 ERA.
It's absurd.
That's stupid.
It's absurd.
Anyway.
So yeah, I could definitely see that happening, and that's what I'm really worried about. And that's the only reason I'm really upset about this trade. It's not for the regular season. I think the Red Sox will be fine this regular season. It's the postseason when you need a spark in that lineup. Will they have that? I think Hanley Ramirez added that spark, and without them, you lose one of your best power bats. Maybe J.D. Martinez can fill that void, which has yet to be seen. We've never really seen him produce very well in the playoffs. I forget what his numbers were with Arizona last year.
I mean, they didn't go far, so they weren't good enough.
Exactly. I think that is the biggest downside of this trade. What is going to happen in the postseason?
Okay, real quick here, because we are kind of up against it. It's our last show of the month, so we're running out of space to offload. But real quick, what is the Red Sox primary focus need to be now? Like, primary personnel move need to be?
Bullpen. And it comes back to Blake Swihart. You get rid of Hanley to give Swihart more at-bats. You package him in a deal with one of your top 10 prospects, whom all of which are crap in the bed this season. So it's not like their trade value is all that high. But you get a back end of the bullpen type of guy. I've heard Tony Maserati throw Zach Britton, who's on the last year of his deal,
yeah.
Who would be it'd take a lot to get him. But I
go
think
get Brad Ziegler back. He's been unhittable this year.
Exactly. One of those guys. You need someone in the bullpen, especially if Carson Smith is out for an extended period of time.
So the bullpen is important. I think the starting rotation needs to be addressed, too. We've seen what Rick Porcello's been the last couple weeks. I don't want to get into
Steven Wright now
because we're up against what?
Steven Wright's pitching pretty well.
I'm not going down that road.
Although I'd be willing to trade him, too.
Yeah. They need a catcher. They need a catcher who can hit. That is my priority right now, because if you look at the bottom of their lineup, it's going to be Swihart, who's hitting sub-200, one of the catchers, which, please, and Jackie Bradley Jr., who may be getting hot again, but we know who he really is. You can't have three automatic outs, 7, 8, 9, whether it's JT Realmuto, whether it's Jonathan Lucroy, who's not having a great year, but we know he can hit. I think they gotta find a way to go get a catcher who can do something on offense. That'll do it for us on this week's show. Thanks for tuning in. If you want to check out previous shows, check us out on Twitter at Callin' It Podcast. Find us online, clnsmedia.com. We'll be back next week. Plenty of Red Sox talk. We're hitting the dog days of summer here, Lovewich. Show's about to get weird. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we got to come up with some segments.
Yeah, we'll have them. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.